Is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's UDRP Domain Name Locking Working Group on Thursday, the 4th of October. We have Alan Greenberg, Matt Schneller, Celia Lehrman-Friedman, Lisa Garono, Christina Dorain, Jonathan Tenenbaum, Michele Nalon, Luke Seufer, Randy Ferguson, Volker Greimann, Gabriela Slack. We have apologies from Faisal Shah. And from staff today, we have Marika Konings, Barry Cobb, and myself, Gisela Gruber. If I could also please just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Michele.
Thank you, Gisela. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're all full of the joys of spring or autumn, as one of my staff reminded me. Okay, we've got a couple of things on the agenda for today. We will start off by doing this thing that I find incredibly tedious to do, but we'll have to do it anyway. Are there any updates to people's SOIs and DOIs, as opposed to DUIs? Going once? Going twice? No. Okay, fine, perfect. Okay, then. Couple of things on the agenda for today, looking at a proposed way of handling our face-to-face meeting in Toronto. My minions are invading my office, excuse me. Here, minion, go. Sorry about that. Face-to-face meeting in Toronto, and then we're going to be also looking at the comments, talking about next steps, etc., etc., etc. Are there any other items that anybody would like to add to the agenda for today? And no, I won't be treating my minions any better when they interrupt me when I'm on calls and they know I'm on a call. No? Okay, then. Now, Marika came up with this wonderful idea of making the face-to-face meeting in Toronto into something a little bit more interactive. So the proposal she came up with, which I think is a nice one, is to make it more like a kind of a debate. So it's more interactive. People take certain positions, whether they're the positions that they hold or not is irrelevant. And Christine, I'm not sure what that means. What's that mean? Oh, she stepped away. Sorry. I'm not familiar with the icon. That people would take a particular position and would defend that position during the meeting. And this way we would have a better, more lively discussion of the issues under consideration. And hopefully we would all benefit from this. So I know that some of you have looked over this because I think people replied to the email that Marika sent out. I'm pretty sure that others of you have been swimming in the sea of ICANN documents that have been released over the last few days. Plus, you've also got your day jobs, so I fully understand that not everybody will have read over these. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick on Marika and ask her to run through this very quickly, but I'll go to Alan first since he's got his hand up. Go ahead, Alan.
No, I'll let Marika go through it first.
Oh, okay. Marika.
Yes. So this is Marika. I'm certainly thinking about the meeting and having looked as well at the submissions we received in response to the public comment forum as well as surveys. And in my view, it looks like we're looking at a couple of specific questions and also only a limited number of positions that can be taken on those questions. So what I try to do is, you know, break those down in, I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Five different topics, and for each of those topics, I identify two propositions. And I think, as I said in my email as well, you know, a purpose, you know, these are very simple statements, and I think we really need to take into account as well that these are not draft recommendations. These are merely for, you know, the purpose of discussing and making it clear for the audience what we're looking at. So basically, the first topic would be looking at when should the lock be applied. So proposition A would be the registrar should apply the lock at the moment of notification by the complainant, provided that the appropriate supporting information is provided. I think this is one of the proposals that we got in response to the public comment forum. Proposition B would be the registrar should apply the lock at the moment the UDRP provider submits the request for verification. And then I have a proposition C, you know, between brackets, which would say it's up to the registrar to determine when the lock is applied. I think it's up to the working group to see whether it makes sense to add that one or whether we're really looking at, you know, A and B and you know, zones around those two most likely as potential recommendations at the end of the day. So topic B would be what kind of lock should be applied. Proposition A is there, a standard EPP lock should be designated as required to be applied by the registrar in the case of a UDRP proceeding. And proposition B would be it's up to the registrar to determine what kind of lock is used as long as it prevents any changes to information agreed upon. Topic C talks about how quickly should the lock be applied. Proposition A is there, the registrar should apply the lock within 24 hours of notification. Proposition B is the registrar should apply the lock with 48 hours of notification. Again, here, I think there might be room for changing these time frames depending on what you think might be reasonable time frames that we might be discussing in the context of this issue. I think these are just the two I picked based on submissions that were received in response to the public comment forum. And then topic D would be which changes should be prevented. Proposition A there is the lock should at a minimum prevent a transfer of the domain name registration to another registrar or registrant. Changes to the registrant information resulting from the lifting of a privacy proxy service should be allowed. And proposition B being the lock should prevent any changes to the domain name registration, including changes to the registrant information resulting from the lifting of a privacy proxy service. Then topic E, I think, is one of the topics that was raised as well in the public comment forum by one of the respondents, the unlocking of a domain name registration. Proposition A here would be the lock may be lifted during the course of a UDRP proceeding when both parties agree to a transfer. And proposition B would be the lock cannot be lifted during the course of a UDRP proceeding. Only when the proceeding has completed can the lock be lifted. And those were the topics and questions I came up with, but I said, this is just a point to start discussing. So if people have other ideas or suggestions on how to refine some of these propositions, I think that's all up for discussion.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I put myself in the queue just simply to echo that, I think Marika did a fantastic job here. Feel free to rip it to shreds, but she did a fantastic job coming up with this document, and I hope everybody realises how much work herself and the others on the ICANN policy team put into these things. I'll go back to criticising ICANN as soon as I finish this brief interlude where I'm being nice about them. Alan, over to you.
Thank you. A few things. First of all, I echo the your last sentiment. I think it's a great idea, and I appreciate someone coming up with it and fleshing out the details. So thank you. Number one is I presume the intent is that the moderator will give a very brief explanation of the current practice or practices before having people defend one or the other of the recommendations. Otherwise, the context, I think, is going to be a little bit vague. And given that we do that, I think Proposition C in the first one is not necessarily necessary, because I think we should also outline that for any of these questions, one of the options the group has is to not make a recommendation, and the status quo stands, which essentially says the registrar does what they want. That's my first overall point. The second one is I agree that we may need to have people defend these positions who do not espouse them themselves, but it would be significantly better if we can find people who believe that's the right answer. So just as we're picking suckers to do this, to the extent that we can pick someone who actually believes it, so much the better. And the third one is I would dearly like to see in the first one another option, which is the one I proposed much earlier, and the group generally said, no, let's not go that way. And I think it would be interesting to see what the public reaction is to it. And that was the suggestion that a mechanism, an electronic mechanism, be set up so that the UDRP provider communicates directly with the registry to lock it, avoiding the possibility of the registrar not doing it immediately and cyberflight because of that. So, obviously, whatever the group believes, but I think even though we're not discussing it at this point, it may be worthy of having a public airing of it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alan. And just for the record, Alan, which proposition will you be defending?
If we add the one I just suggested, I'd be delighted to defend it.
Okay, so the proposition that you're suggesting is that there should be a registry lock available. A lock controlled by the registry operator.
And initiated at the request of the UDRP provider.
Okay. Marika, did you note that?
Yeah, and this is Marika. Can I then just clarify, because we're talking a bit as well, like, so at what moment would the UDRP provider make that request? Basically at the moment of notification or verification, or you want to leave that part open?
Presumably at the same time, they now notify the registrar to put the lock on, which is as soon as they verified that this is a bona fide request and they have to take action on it.
Okay, so it would be up in the moment of verification.
Yeah, essentially, I think that maps to the same time that they currently send a request to the registrar. So instead that they would do have some interaction, presumably electronic and not manual, with the registry to enact the lock.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Anybody else? Okay, now, first off, does anybody feel strongly that this way of doing the face-to-face meeting is a bad idea? Okay. I'll take the silence to mean that you all love the idea.
I like it.
Thank you. Now, there are several positions. I mean, we don't need a person for every single position, because if we're looking at it in terms of the topics, but it would be helpful to have a couple of people who would defend a particular proposition, a particular position, so that this would actually work. So we need a couple of volunteers. Alan has already volunteered himself for his registry lock concept. Christine said that she'd do anything we asked her to do. I thought it was a very dangerous thing to suggest, but that's okay. And Celia has her hand up. Go ahead, Celia.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, this is Celia, I wanted to ask a question regarding the questions themselves, to suggest, so maybe that could be after we decide on who's going to expose.
No, work away now. I mean, it's okay. We, you know, go ahead.
All right. So my question was on topic B, what kind of log should be applied. I think that maybe the proposition A will be a bit unpopular among the audience because from what we've been discussing, it seems that many registrars have been doing this outside of an EPP log, and it has been working fine. So I'm not sure if that position as stated is too strong. Maybe we should say like a standard EPP should be the best practice, because I feel that this is going to be unpopular as it is written right now.
So how would you can you come up with suggested wording as to how it should be worded?
Mm-hmm. Like a standard should be some sort of way to say that this is the best practice, not as required, or saying that this is the minimum, but not that this is required.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Marika, and then Alan.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think the idea here is to have a bit two opposing views, and even if, you know, I think it gives the working group as well great information indeed. If everyone says, well, that's a ridiculous idea and no way we're going to recommend that, I think that will provide some insights too, because I think if you're making more the best practices or not required, I think then you're basically already in proposition B, where you're saying, it's up to the registrar, as long as it locks whatever it needs to lock, we don't care. So I think if we soften the first one, we run the risk that we basically are saying the same thing. So yeah, so my point is basically saying that I think these are on purpose a bit, the opposite, and might mean indeed that everyone hates it, but I think at the same time that will really send a clear message to the working group that indeed that's an option that we might not need to consider anymore, because it was really clear that no one likes it and there's no support for it.
Okay, Celia, sounds good.
Yeah, thanks, Celia. Thank you, Marika. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Basically, what Marika said, I think the whole point here is to look at the options, and it may not be the one we think we're going to select, but I think we want to show the extreme in this kind of discussion. So I wouldn't put a moderate center of the road one, unless that's as extreme as we can imagine. Thanks.
I'm just going to put myself in the queue here very quickly. Taking my chair hat off, putting my registrar hat on, and whatever. I'd agree with Alan. I mean, in something like this, what we want to be able to do is to try and guess reactions and engagement. So if you moderate it too much, bring it too close to the center, make it too conservative, too palatable, too diplomatic, you're not going to guess the kind of reaction you might get from a slightly more extreme option, be that a palatable option or an unpalatable option. So, personally, I'm in favor of something being quite blunt and lacking in diplomacy. I don't do diplomacy too well anyway. Any other thoughts on these? And are people going to volunteer for these positions, or should we start picking people at random and being really cruel? I don't all volunteer at once. I mean, the rush of people to volunteer, it's overwhelming. I'm really impressed with your enthusiasm.
Michele, a question. Do we want two or three people on the stage with anyone who's there taking one position in each of the questions, or are we looking for a wider range of people?
I'm perfectly happy if we can have two or three people. I don't think this... Let's just try and get a few people. I mean, hey, if everybody suddenly rushes and says, hey, I've got a really strong feeling about this, great. Okay, so Christine has said she wants to go with the lock timing. Perfect. You volunteered for that. Thank you. Boom. Done. That's yours. Excellent. Thank you. Alan's in. It has his registry lock, so could have at least one other person. Volker. No. Luke? Oh, Christine's suggesting if there are any brand owners on the call that they would be good for the first topic.
And this is Marika. No, I can add, but I think on the first topic, that was indeed the proposition A. I think it's basically partly the proposal that was made by Inta. So maybe this is something we can reach out to Claudio or ask him if there's someone within their group that would be willing to talk around that issue. I don't know if any members are here that are also members of Inta that will be willing to take that that up on themselves.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Matt says he would be able to help, but he won't be in the room physically, and wondering would that work? What's our setup in terms of logistics, Marika? Are we going to have proper audio bridges and Adobe and all the fancy stuff?
Yeah, this is Marika. We should have an audio bridge and as well Adobe Connect. It's just to know that it's, I don't know where Matt is based. But if you're in the U.S., I think it's, the timing shouldn't be too bad because it's, I think, 9 o'clock in the morning. So we could definitely accommodate that.
It's not optimal, but it should certainly work.
Well, look, okay, we've got a couple of people who volunteered. So let's see. We'll go back to the list and say, right, we've got the following people who have volunteered. These are the preferences that they've expressed. And if we can get a couple of other people, great. If not, we'll go with that. And just for the record, I'm not putting myself down for anything since I will be trying to kind of moderate it with Marika. Brain not working again today. I apologize. Marika, go ahead. You have your hand up. Your virtual hand is raised.
Yeah, this is Marika. What I can do is, following this meeting, basically update the proposed format and add some of the names that were suggested now, and hopefully that will attract some other people to sign up for some of the propositions. But maybe on topic B, can we find a registrar that we're willing to talk about, A or B?
It's Alan. I'm not a registrar, but I'm willing to talk about A because I think it's in line with the previous one.
Okay, so Alan will be for the purposes of this conversation. Alan will will be a registrar.
Ooh!
I've always wanted to say that to you, Alan. This is great.
Thank you. That's the best vote of confidence I've gotten in a while.
There's nothing like it. Geez, Alan, remember the good old days? How things change. Right. Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
Alan and I are getting nostalgic.
I'm sure we'll oppose each other someday soon, so don't worry about it.
Oh, don't worry. We oppose each other on a regular basis. we generally agree when there's a certain amount of logic being applied. Okay then. Right, so that's pretty much done. And Celia has also said on the chat that she'd be happy to take positions as well. Celia, will you be in Toronto in person as well, or are you dialing in?
Yeah, I'll be in person.
Okay, perfect. Cool. Right then. So this is our format. This is what we're going to do. Any last thoughts, comments, issues, suggestions on this before we move on to the next item on the agenda? Nope. Perfect. Okay then. So we're moving on with the review of the comments. If one of the lovely ICANN staff people who has access to the Adobe magic, thank you, could updo the thing with the thing. Perfect. Okay, so we were... I've got the scroll power. We were way, way down. This has been updated with our latest mutterings, has it, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. That's correct. And just maybe to emphasize as well that these are my notes from the meeting. If people feel that I've captured the discussion wrongly or I've missed a certain part, feel free to send any edits or corrections you may have, and we update the document. And I think we left off at comments 65.
Yeah, that's where I thought we were. I mean, there's still stuff towards the top of the document we haven't gone near, but we can come back to that afterwards. Okay, then. 65. In cases where a privacy or proxy registration service appears as the parent registrant in the public WHOIS database at the time a complaint is filed, it is important that the so-called underlying registrant name and contact information be provided by the registrar at the same time the disputed name is locked. Therewith, giving the parties, as well as the panelists, full particulars of the registered proxy registration service provider, as well as the underlying registrant. So basically you're talking about revealing... I'm a bit confused by the last bit there, though. So they're giving the underlying data plus the proxy data, or I'm a bit confused? Did I misunderstand that? They're giving the parties as well as the... Okay, so yeah, it sounds to me like they want both. Okay. Any thoughts or comments on that? No? Okay. If nobody has any strong feelings on it, my feeling on that would be this is noted, and this is also something that we have been discussing. We've been discussing the logistics of this. Okay, 66. Once a domain name is locked, there can be no change or modification in the registrant information for that domain until the UDRP proceeding is included. Concluded. Beg your pardon. That will make much more sense. Now, the only question I have there is, in the original comment, did they specify where the registrant information was coming from, Marika, or was it just like that? I mean, did they specify registrant information in public who is, or did they just say registrant information?
This is Marika. I'm quickly looking. I think they were just talking about registrant information. Let me see. They don't. It's exactly what they say. It doesn't specify anything further. So,
okay.
You say
that, yeah. So if for example we were to take that the registrant information was the underlying information as opposed to the public who is information, or any other way, then it wouldn't really make any difference. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, this is really in relation to the previous one, but it does impact this one. If we were to follow the previous one, doesn't that imply that if the privacy proxy service was an arm's length one, that is, the data is not accessible directly by the registrar, that would delay, perhaps significantly, the locking of the domain?
Sorry, so you're saying that if the registrar doesn't have access to the Whois data, it would delay the locking?
No, if the registrar doesn't have access to the underlying data.
Okay, that would delay what? The locking?
It would delay the lock, because the 65 is saying that the underlying data should be revealed to the dispute, I think it should be revealed to the dispute provider at the same time it is locked.
Okay.
So I think that would potentially have a severe impact on when it's locked, perhaps adding days delay to it.
Okay. Okay.
So I think we should note that, but that comes back into the second one, into the one we're talking about now, that once it's locked, we cannot change it. So if we don't wait to lock it until we get the underlying information, then the underlying information can, you know, according to 66, cannot be corrected. So.
Okay.
These are two flavors of our general question of what should the order of these things be, and do we need to change who is to reveal who the real beneficiary owner is.
All right.
We can't do all of these things, however, they conflict with each other.
Okay, perfect. I've got Christine, and then I have Matt.
In from now. Hey, I had a question sort of following up on your comment, Alan, and that is, is the concern for the delay... It's my understanding that when the registrar gets the email from the provider asking them to lock, they go look up, you know, whatever's in the Whois database, but at the same time they also look up who the underlying registrant is. And in your experience as a registrar, things are different, but are there additional steps when there's a privacy or proxy service, or are you only talking about sort of in the situation where the registrant has contracted with some third party that would not be affiliated with the registrar in any way?
Yes.
I guess that was my question, because we haven't noticed, you know, that in our experience, we haven't noticed that the availability of a privacy or proxy service, that in and of itself being a contributing factor to a delay in a response. You know, parties delay to respond, registrars may delay to respond for a variety of reasons, but the privacy and proxy service doesn't seem to be one of them. So I guess maybe I'm just asking for a little clarification about the concern.
Yeah, it's Alan. To be clear, despite what Michaeli says, I'm not a registrar. My understanding was I suspect, but I don't know, that the vast majority of privacy proxy registrations are done by an affiliate of the registrar, and essentially the information is available. But that's not necessarily true. And if it is an arm's length relationship, then the registrar is going to have to ask the proxy service, you know, who should be the recipient of the UDRP? Are you taking responsibility or not? And that could be, certainly could be a delay. And I'm not even sure if the registrar always knows that it's a proxy or a privacy service.
Okay, it's Christine. Thanks, Alan.
Okay. Matt, go ahead.
I guess the other way we could read this is that if you use a proxy service that isn't affiliated with the registrar, you as the registrant are taking the risk that the domain name may be locked in place with the privacy service if the privacy or proxy service that you use doesn't respond quickly enough to the registrar's request to swap out information.
So, Matt, this is Michele. What would that change? I'm trying to understand what you mean by that.
I guess, so, complaint is filed, request for lock, wherever we decide that sort of best comes from, gets to the registrar. The registrar notes that there's what looks to be a proxy service, contacts them, asks, hey, are you a proxy service? If so, we're about to lock the domain name, so please change it if the change is appropriate. And if the proxy or privacy service doesn't respond in a prompt enough manner, I think it may be reasonable for the registrar to assume that it's registered on the proxy or privacy service's own behalf and just lock it. That addresses the concern, I think, that about delaying imposition of the lock.
Okay. Sorry, I'm Matt, this is Michele again. Michele being very, very stupid, I think, but what you're saying here is that if the privacy proxy service is supplied by a third party to which the registrar does not have direct relations or access, that the domain would be locked and sent to UDRP with the privacy proxy service data in who is and everything else. I'm trying to understand, what's the actual issue with that?
I don't think there is an issue. I'm just saying that I don't think you necessarily need to delay imposition.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Now, I was trying to understand. I thought you were saying there was an issue, and I was trying to understand what the issue was, and I was getting very, very confused.
I think, you know, at some point it may be okay for the registrar just to take the listed information and who is at face value and go from there. And that's just a risk that you take when you use the privacy or proxy service.
Okay.
I'm not stating that that's sort of the right position or anything. I'm just saying that's one.
No, that's fine. Sorry, you confused me completely, which is more down to me being stupid than anything you said. Christine and then Jonathan.
This is Christine from NAF. I was just going to chime in and try to help clarify, but it sounds like Matt did a good job, and I agree.
But I'm stupid. Okay, thank you.
Well, okay. Not...
I'm joking, Christine. I'm winding you up. I'm just joking. Don't worry. Jonathan, go ahead.
This is Jonathan. I guess what I'm trying to understand, in what would the scenario be where the registrar wouldn't have is this in the instance where the registrant themselves would be offering some kind of a proxy or privacy to maybe in like the case of a reseller or something? Like, how would the registrar not know the identity or the actual information for the registrant?
Jonathan, it's Michele. You're a lawyer, aren't you?
Well, kind of.
Okay, so in a simple one, imagine if you were providing proxy services to your clients. So as far as the registrar is concerned, you are the registrant, but you're registering the domains on behalf of your corporate clients who don't want their details revealed. Volker has his hand up. I'll let him go ahead. He might have a better example. Go ahead, Volker.
No. I think that's the question I was asking, and I think that goes to you know, the issue of resellers or registrants providing proxy service to someone else. But, you know, I mean, in cases like that, I mean, at the end of the day, you have the registrar of record is ultimately, you know, responsible per their, you know, per their accreditation agreement and everything else. So, but no, I just wanted that clarity. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Just before Volker goes, just for the record, Luke has put on the chat, as far as he's concerned, they inform the registrant and ask them to lift the proxy privacy service within 48 hours. If they don't, they just lock the domain. Now, then, Volker, go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify, yes, there's a lot of cases where resellers have their own privacy proxy services, where we do not have access to the data. There's brand management services that offer proxy services for brands that have not yet registered domain names for for brands that have not gone public. There's all kinds of cases where a registrar would not know who is the underlying registrant, even if it's plainly obvious that the proxy service is used. And then there's the less than obvious proxy services as well, of course. If I register a domain name for my mother, I'm a proxy service in a way.
You just know what you mean is you're a very good son, Volker. That's what you mean.
No, and I appreciate that. Thanks, Volker.
Christine is asking on the chat, in relation to what Luke was saying about locking the domains after the 48 hours, Christine's asking, so when you give the registrant 48 hours heads up before locking, do you see any cyber flight or deletion of domains? Luke's reply, no, because he already locks the domain against transfers at that time. Okay. Any other things? Anything else on this comment? I assume that's an old hand, Volker. Fine.
Very old, yes.
Okay. Next one. From Inter, the registrar should not itself be allowed to make changes to the registrant information, including terminating its affiliated proxy privacy service to remove it or its affiliated entity from the position of registrant. Such a prohibition would both encourage trademark owners to contact the proxy service with reasonable evidence of actionable harm pursuant to the provisions required by the RAA's 3.7.7.3 prior to filing the complaint, and it would encourage proxy services to act upon such complaints by revealing the beneficial's owner's information as contemplated by the RAA. Surely somebody has a reaction to this one. No reaction. Christine has a reaction.
Not surprisingly, right? Okay, so my only thought is...
Christine, you're so quiet and you're so timid. Go ahead.
You're the only one who thinks that.
I know.
I'm trying to say, this into suggestion sounds great on paper, and my concern as a provider, and we've seen this happen, is what happens is there's a fair number of brand owners who actually don't want the privacy services lifted because they want – the UDRP requires that a registrant be whoever's listed in who is, and if they can all go against – and I'm going to pick on GoDaddy and say domains by proxy. And if they can all pick on domains by proxy and they can say domains by proxy is registered 2,000 domain names, you know, my client's domain names, and proceed and bring them all in one complaint, they get one heck of a deal from the provider. The providers, you know, we charge, like, for instance, NAF charges $1,300 for one or two domain names. But we only charge an additional $150 if you want to add three more domain names to that complaint. And it kind of, and the price breaks continue all the way up. So if you file a UDRP complaint with 2,000 domain names, you're not paying $1,300 times 2,000. You're paying, you know, a decent chunk of change, but it's prorated way, way, way less. It's like $100 a domain name or something. And so what some of the people like to do is file against the proxy service or the privacy service because that allows them to file as, you know, file against one entity who is domained by proxy. The problem is from a provider's standpoint, you get their domain names might be registered by, 1,800 different people. And you start to get responses in, and you start to get various respondents. And so you end up with this massive, almost ends up being sort of a class action, but a reverse sort of class action case. And it's really very complicated from an administrative standpoint. And we've had a couple cases like that. And so, I don't know, just from the provider's standpoint, it may not, be super germane to this group, but I just wanted to point it out that there are some practical reasons why IntaSuggestion may not be practically feasible.
Thank you, Christine. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this? Matt, go ahead. Matt, are you on mute still or something?
Sorry about that. It's also impossible.
You're talking to your phone.
Am I off here?
No, I can hear you now.
Okay, much better. It's also worth noting that at the time of filing, the complainant doesn't necessarily know whether they're dealing with one defendant or whether they're dealing with 1,800 defendants, because that information is all behind a privacy shield that makes it impossible to tell whether there is a single owner or multiple owners at the time of filing.
Okay, thank you. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a lot of these questions may be answered once we've addressed the whole issue of privacy and proxy services and, whether it's accredit them or whatever, but be able to know from the who is whether this is indeed valid information for the real beneficiary owner registrant or not. As it is right now, as was just pointed out, we don't know, or the trademark holder doesn't know for sure. If it says, domains by proxy, you can be pretty sure that they're not the beneficiary owner. But for other more obscure ones, it's not at all clear. And since the comment says registrant information, it's not talking about what is in who is. It's saying the real registrant information, presumably the one that the provider uses. I don't see what they're saying is a privacy service is taking full responsibility for any domain they register for now and forever. And I'm not sure that's something within our scope for us to mandate.
Thank you, Alan. I own a privacy. I'm putting myself in the queue here. I already put myself there, taking my chair hat off, passing it to Alan briefly. As a registrar and as the owner of a privacy service, I have serious concerns, maybe is the word, with this suggestion, because as Alan points out, this would make the privacy proxy provider responsible for absolutely everything forever that happens with any domains registered through them. Whereas I would have thought that the privacy proxy provider would be able to have terms and conditions which would allow them to disable the service in the case of some kind of infringement. So I have concerns with this. Volker, over to you.
Thank you, Michael. I'm a firm believer in assigning blame where it's due. So essentially, the privacy proxy service must be removed so that the true ownership is reflected in the panel decision. Furthermore, many panel decisions have begun to track a certain pattern of infringement based on the registrant of record, and if the privacy proxy service is not removed, that would be the case very quickly for those privacy proxy services. Whereas if they were removed and the blame were assigned to the right spot, then these were not as easy. So I can imagine why the brand owners would like that, but I'm not very very confident that this is the right way to go.
Thanks. Thank you, Volker. Matt, go ahead.
Just to play it out, I guess one other option to respond to Alan's comment in the queue that if privacy proxy services take responsibility for the actions of the real registrant, it would drive up prices. The other potential option is that it just limits the scope. The way proxy services tend to work on in some other situations, like those that we discussed, whether it's an attorney working for a client or you registering a domain name under your name for a family member, you have some other indication of what the end user the domain name is going to be doing with it and presumably are comfortable with it before you start acting on behalf of that other party. So it may not necessarily raise prices, but may restrict it to situations where you know, you have some sort of personal knowledge of the privacy or proxy service is more directly connected with the individual to whom that service is being provided. Anyway, not an official position, just sort of an alternative way that things might play out in response to Alan's comment.
Thank you, Matt. Volker, you still have your hand up, and Alan does as well, if one of you would like to...
Yeah, I'm a lazy bugger. I forget to take it down all the time. Sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah, it's Alan. I'll respond to that. I wasn't talking about doing it for your mother or an attorney doing it for a client under contract. I'm looking at the generally available, tick off this box, pay us $6 more, and we won't tell them either who you are or where you are. Yes, of course, the trusted relationship can go on regardless of that, and the prices don't necessarily change, but I was looking at the more generic publicly available service.
Okay.
You know, if I'm going to take responsibility for any stupid thing you do, and I have no, you know, I may try to sue you afterwards if I can find you, that certainly would raise the prices. It's not relevant to our discussion. It's just clearly it's not an acceptable situation. We're not going to get privacy services. You know, they'll go out of the business before accepting responsibility for all the stupid things their customers do. In my humble opinion.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I'm afraid I don't want to. I'd better not comment any further on that. Next one we have, which was the last one because we're running out of time as usual. Comment 68, very simple one. El Instituto supports clarifying how registrars should deal with proxy and privacy services when a domain name is locked. Beyond saying noted and thank you, is there anything further that anybody would like to add to that? Okay. Perfect. Okay, we can fit one more in because we're doing okay. Charter question 5, whether additional safeguards should be created for the protection of registrants in cases where the domain name is locked subject to a UGRP proceeding. For the registrar survey, first one, ensure that registrants have been notified of the proceeding. Registrants should be allowed to renew the domain. Any comments, thoughts? Christine, go ahead.
Yes, it is the provider's responsibility to notify the registrant using the WHOIS information and any information provided by the registrar, including all of the details in the administrative, technical, billing, and registrant fields. So assuming that either the WHOIS or what the registrar has is accurate, that's sort of the only way. So it's, I guess one comment there is to make sure that the registrant has their stuff updated. Secondly, I guess my second comment to that would be the EDDP, the expired domain name deletion policy, does allow the registrant to renew the domain name.
Okay, and Alan?
Yeah, question to Christine. You say you use all the information, but I thought I heard earlier in some previous call that you use all the information regarding email addresses. Do you indeed use paper addresses also?
Yes, a written notice, which is not an ad, you know, we don't send the whole file to, you know, 17 email or 17 paper or hard copy addresses, but a 3-page letter is sent to
okay.
every
so
address.
You do use the post office mailing address in it.
Like for the complaint. Other correspondence, no. But
yeah.
That the initial service of the complaint, and now granted, now the part of the part, you know, maybe this is a misunderstanding, is we don't notify the registrant until after the domain name's locked.
Yeah.
And the cases, and the complainant has addressed any deficiencies it has in its complaint, because we're not about to serve a complaint to a registrant that, you know, might just get dismissed. So, you know, we do an initial check to make sure that the complaint isn't prima facie bad, and then we ask for the lock, and then we actually force the complainant to go through and dot its I's and cross its T's, and then we serve the complaint on the registrant. It is sent via email to the email addresses, and then a written notice, a 3-page document telling the complainant what was sent and where it was sent, is sent to all the hard copy addresses and the fax numbers.
Okay, so in your case, you are fully complying with 69 as at the moment. The only question is, is that a requirement in the UDRP currently,
yes,
or is that something you go over and above?
Nope, it is absolutely a requirement in the UDRP, UDRP Rule 2, and or Rule, yeah, Rule 2,
okay.
And the registrant renewal is in the expired domain deletion policy.
Okay. So in that case, the answer is it's already policy.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to say we're going to call this a day or a week or a month or whatever you want to call it. We will follow up via email, and the next time we meet will be in Toronto. I was going to say sunny Toronto, but I don't think that's really true. Alan, what's the weather going to be like in Toronto?
The luck of the draw.
Well, do we need to bring lots of woolly jumpers, or...
It's not likely to be very cold, whether it's raining or not, I don't know. I live in a colder place than Toronto, and October, it can range. It's not likely to be snowing in Montreal. It certainly won't be snowing in Toronto. Well, these days, we never know. It may be below freezing. It may not be. Probably will not be below freezing, but I don't think there's a guarantee.
Thank you for the very accurate weather forecast.
It's as accurate as I get from my official weather forecasters.
Don't give up the day job. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to confirm that after our meeting in Toronto, that the first meeting would be the 1st of November, provided that we don't have many cancellations because it's in Europe, in certain parts of Europe, a public holiday. But also to know that we might have a little time zone issue at that date, because I think at that point in time, Europe has already switched to daylight savings, while I think the U.S. hasn't. So we just need to figure out the time that we're having the call at and make sure that people don't get confused about that. So maybe we can talk among the chairs how to handle that and inform the group.
Europe has switched out of daylight saving when North America hasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thanks everybody. Speak to you in Toronto in person, and for those who aren't joining us in person, speak to you via the wonderful powers of the internets and telephones and stuff. Thanks everyone.
Thank you, Michele. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye,
thank you.
Bye.